Welcome in to Cue the Banter, a podcast about watch lists and
the discourse.
Oh, the discourse. Causes. I was like, do I say discourse? And then that tune came in. I was like, wait, you gotta. The takes. Yeah. It's about takes. It's about watch lists, and it's about takes. Add things to your cue. And then you let the banter ensue. I'm Jared.
How's it going? I am Nick. It's hard to operate at a level where we've introduced the podcast, the premise of the podcast, and also the host of the show within the first 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I don't have anything in front of me. That was off the dome, which was probably quite evident. So
yeah. Thank you for.
I'm not saying it as a brag. And for the viewers, anyone watching on Twitch, which, you know, we just went live, so probably not. I look like Deep Throat.
Excuse me?
I have no key lighting.
Remember, someone who has no idea about Nixon's administration hears that and they're like,
Well, but Twitch said, like, according to recent things in Twitch, like, that's okay. You know,
Twitch. I'll tell you what.
I might just take my clothes off now.
Twitch. There's a lot of. I really like streaming to Twitch. When we do the podcast, I think it's a lot of fun to be able to have. Hopefully, at some point, have more live engagement.
Well, we have had it before. Yeah, this is certainly a more accessible time for it, especially being on the West Coast. We record at like 10 p.m. on a Tuesday.
Yeah, it's 1 a.m. listeners we don't have a lot of when you're streaming it live. But it's nice because we get to have a section where we're live here and then we take this episode. That's, it's obviously just a live recording of the episode. I really enjoy it. I think that there is a lot of discourse surrounding Twitch and their terms of service, which I don't know if I've seen terms of service discourse like this in a long time. You know what I mean?
What do you think that says?
I don't know
about
Twitch drama is weird. But I also think that it's fascinating the, like, how big streaming is. Like this, like streaming podcast, streaming video games, streaming whatever. It's such a big industry that, I still think it's not even close to reaching the audience that it could, because I think it's definitely a it's an age thing. There are a lot of 60-year-olds hopping on Twitch to look for a new podcast to listen to. I don't know.
That's true.
No,
I mean,
no,
probably. I mean, perhaps. I guess I don't really know what the statistics are for that sort of thing, but it's certainly becoming more of a central figure in terms of what we consume, how we consume it.
Correct.
In the olden days, we watched movies. We watched films. We went to the movies, the theater.
What happened?
I don't know. I mean, it's just a different age. I mean, obviously, a lot of people still go to the movies. You aren't one of them. And that's part of kind of what we're going to get into today. But it's the end of the year.
Correct.
This is probably, traveling with the holidays, it's probably going to be the last time we record this year. So this is our end.
So for the listeners, it's currently December. It's December 26th, 2023. You're traveling. It's December. Sorry, December 16th, 2023, not 26th. You're traveling home. You're traveling to New Jersey tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm traveling to New Jersey on a red eye on the 22nd. I come back on the 30th. You come back on the 6th. So who knows? Who knows what if we're going to record something small while we're together back in Jersey. Maybe we'll loop Zach in. Because the guy is PC now. He can record on our phones.
Yeah, that's true. We can do a little snippet or something.
But anything we do there will be snippets of things. So this is we're looking at this as our last full regular kind of normal episode of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, and hopefully more in the new year. Look, we got a spreadsheet now. There's a spreadsheet now with working episodes. We might actually try and continue to do this. But yeah, so like, what's going on? I mean, it's like you said, December 16th. What's the latest? The latest is the Golden Globes, the nominations came out. Not really as big of a deal as it used to be. They're like kind of like back, I guess. You know, there was last year it wasn't even, a broadcast. Like there was a show, there just wasn't a broadcast. Now it's on Paramount Plus, CBS. It's going to be live broadcast this year. And they released their nominations.
Yep.
Some surprises. You know, some pretty straightforward things. It's interesting because it also, it's unclear how much of an impact the Globes have this year.
Yeah, because that used to be one of those things where it was like, all right, let's see what the nominations are. Let's see who wins here. And then you start making your list of, okay, this actor was nominated, Golden Globes, SAG, they were nominated here, boom, 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 lean to the Oscars, we think they're a lock. And I feel like, I do agree that I feel like that the Golden Globes do not hold that weight that they once held. I don't know what the place is there, because obviously, you know, the Oscars are the biggest deal. But I don't think the Golden Globes are at the point now where it's like exactly a throwaway award. I think it's a good opportunity for like Best Picture, Musical, or Comedy. It's kind of one of those things where you're like, I like that you have two different groups to nominate from, because it allows more recognition for more movies that aren't that typical, like, oh yeah, this is going to get its Oscar nomination.
Right. Yeah. I think it honestly should just kind of go more into that. The fact that it has that sort of variety to it, to where it's like Jennifer Lawrence was nominated for No Hard Feelings. Is she going to get nominated? Is she going to get nominated for an Academy Award? No, she's not going to get nominated. No, but she gets her Golden Globe nomination. Because again, the comedy stuff, like especially like that and out now, like raunchy comedy isn't going to be represented at the Academy Awards. So like, it's cool that it gets the Globes. Now the Globes also, like, there are movies that kind of seem like very much up the Globes alley, at least in recent years, that didn't get nominated, like The Color Purple. Color Purple didn't get nominated for Best Picture, Musical, or Comedy. It's a musical. I mean,
what's up with secretly releasing? What's up with releasing secret musicals?
Right. There's been three.
Color Purple. Is Wonka a musical?
Wonka's a musical. But that's exactly the thing. You just had to ask me. And then Mean Girls.
That's what I mean. So I don't know. I don't know what's up with that.
Is it like, do people, perhaps it's a marketing strategy. People don't want to see musicals.
But then doesn't, once the cat's out of the bag, once the movie comes out, someone goes, I want to go see this movie.
Right.
Then the movie comes out and people go, I didn't even know that was a fucking musical. Then does someone go, oh, okay, never mind. I was going to see it, but now I'm not going to because it's a musical. Are they thinking that the pre-sale tickets are going to help? And then once people find out it's a musical, they already have the tickets, so they go. I don't know exactly what the play is. I think a play that is weird is being like, let's make a musical and make it a secret that it's a musical. And it's like, surprise.
Right. Well, you have to like think that like the creators behind it aren't necessarily like so much into that idea. Like, I mean, you'd hope. I think if I have a director who's making a musical that wants to make a musical, loves that genre and is really mm-hmm. like going into it and going all out on that whole idea, I would hope they're not like, yeah, but let's not market it that way.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That part seems
so. It feels more like a studio decision of people not really wanting to go see musicals, which we used to be a country.
Yeah, you know what? It's kind of like anything, and I think I've always argued that where it's like, oh, I'm not going to see that because I don't like musicals. What do you mean? It's not like every musical's
right.
The
this
same.
Is your this is the point you make with westerns. It's your
with
core,
westerns
it's
and
your
everything.
Core belief it's, with westerns.
Yes, it is my core belief with westerns, which is I don't like westerns. What do you mean? Oh, they're too boring. You're watching the wrong westerns then.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. You know, and that's, but I think that happens with a lot of things. I don't like musicals. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know how to argue against that. You don't like people. Do you like music? Yeah. What are we doing here?
Right. Like, they can be so energetic and so much fun to watch, especially in a theater with a group of people. Yeah, because what is it about the musical? I mean, people like to go watch music films. People just went and saw, the Eras Tour film. Renaissance is in theaters right now. Like, people are going to see concert films.
Both bangers is what the critics are saying.
People are enjoying. I mean, they're like, there was a whole thing with the whole experience of going to see the Eras Tour movie, and I believe Renaissance is a little bit more of a documentary, whereas documentary concert film, where Eras is literally just like, here, we're filming.
Yeah, they already did. Was it Miss Americana, whatever the
right? That was her documentary.
That was the documentary. So this is just the film here. Stop Making Sense, the Talking Heads documentary by, is that Michael Mann?
No, Jonathan Demme.
Jonathan Demme, sorry.
Movie podcast. We host a movie podcast.
Yeah, I couldn't. It's weird because I'm like trying to think of the time of. I'm like, oh yeah, that's Demme from.
It's a guy. You picked a guy.
What for a guy, right? Yeah. So Demme has that. That gets a re-release in A24. Stop Making Sense. That's last year, right? Or is that the year before?
No, American Utopia was
American Utopia was
2020. Stop Making Sense had their anniversary re-release this year, which I think came out around the time of the Taylor Swift one, which I don't know how much that affected it. I'm sure, but I mean,
So we're going to talk about Globes. You mind if I pull the nominations up on the screen here?
Yeah, pull them up.
That way, and I don't also, real quick, I think this is a great opportunity to talk about a lesson of how also movies are campaigned for. Now, obviously, I don't know all the ins and outs, but obviously they get campaigned for. It's not like a movie comes out, everyone sits alongside and they go, well, I hope we get a nomination for this. It's a big campaign process. If you want to look at the history of ones that are insane and you're going, how the hell did what's that movie?
I don't know. It's your point. You're making this point.
Saving Private Ryan.
Okay, so how Shakespeare in Love loses to Saving
Shakespeare
Private Ryan.
In Love wins over Saving Private Ryan. There's plenty of articles out there about what the that campaign process was like. More insight into how absolutely horrid and horrible Harvey Weinstein was as a person. But why I'm telling you that is you're going to see
you're adding that onto his crimes. Even listed in his prison sentence was like campaigned hard and took the Oscar away from Saving Private Ryan.
Let's see. Right. And this is why I bring that up.
Because, it's a political thing.
Let's take a look at the screen from Variety, where I'm looking at the Golden Globes nominations. As you can see, the background is a big four-year consideration Best Picture for Killers of the Flower Moon. Up top above that is another ad from Apple, which is four-year consideration Best Picture Killers of a Flower Moon. Let me scroll down here and try and look at some of the nominees. By the way, for your consideration, Best Picture, Gladstone Holds the Soul of the Film, Killers of a Flower Moon. Let's go down here. Monumental, by the way, is how they feel about Killers of the Flower Moon. Let's go again. Another advertisement break. Monumental for Killers of the Flower Moon. On the side, Monumental, Killers of the Flower Moon. Down here, another ad break. Monumental, Killers of the Flower Moon. Best Picture, Motion Picture Drama. Here's the lists of it. What's right below that? Another ad break for Monumental, Killers of the Flower Moon. So,
and so on and so forth.
But
does that make people like, you know what? I look at them like, oh.
I do not know.
Yeah.
I do not know. I do see right here the 2023 telecast was MC'd. Oh, Gerard Carmichael. Isn't that your boy?
Gerard Carmichael? Yeah. I mean, he's pretty good. He's pretty good.
You really liked his special, right?
His special was really good. Bo Burnham directed it, and just saw him in Poor Things.
What about the fact that apparently he wrote?
Oh, you're still on this. Yeah, he wrote it.
I'm not on this. How can you not be on a sequel to Django that involves fucking Zorro? Okay, I don't want to fucking hear you're still on this. Like, how could I not be on that?
Yeah, that's like, that just sounds fun. That sounds cool. And then what? Sounds, they were just like, nah, I don't know.
It sounds fantastic. So, but as it says here, the Globe seeks to reinvent itself and restore its reputation as a loose and fun yet still prestigious major award ceremony. So they're trying to keep it fun. The problem is you don't want to get into that territory where you are like the MTV Movie Awards. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go over some of the nominees? Best Motion Picture Drama? We got Oppenheimer. We have Killers of the Flower Moon, which I don't know if you've heard.
I heard it's monumental. I heard.
For your consideration, Best Picture. Maestro, Past Lives, The Zone of Interest, and Anatomy of a Fall. So we got Universal, Apple, Netflix, two A24s, and a Neon.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, I mean, we got Zone of Interest, Anatomy of a Fall, and Past Lives, I believe, are also all nominated in the Best Picture non-English language, which Past Lives is like, ooh, it is an American film.
Okay.
But obviously there's multiple language spoken throughout. So I guess that's how they justify getting it in there for non-English language, at least. But exciting that it was nominated for picture drama. I mean, like, it was a movie that came out earlier this year, had a lot of buzz around it, critics buzz around it, and excitement. And then it sort of just kind of like, as more movies came out, it kind of left the conversation. So this getting nominations here at a major award show is a sign that maybe it might stick around and have something to say come Oscar time.
See, we got a Past Lives still sobbing in the chat. I haven't seen Past Lives. We're gonna go over my year. Obviously here, and I'm going to try and defend myself.
Sure.
Okay.
You're not on trial. To be clear, you're not on trial. I have made a syllabus for you moving forward for the next couple of months.
Nick on trial. I am on trial. So Best Picture, musical or comedy, Barbie. Everyone saw that coming. Poor Things. American Fiction, The Holdovers, May, December, and Air. This is not good. This is going to be the longest syllabus ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're reading all these movies. You're like, I've never seen a single one of these things. Interestingly enough, no musicals. Like we said, like the big snub here is Color Purple, which was expected to maybe be in the conversation for Best Picture. Doesn't even get a Globe nom. So now it's on the outside looking in, in a category that it's specifically tailored to. And it feels like more of a Globe. Like that's sort of thing, like a historical musical kind of just feels more like a Globes thing. And it doesn't even get a nom here. Instead, I think Air gets in instead of it, which was kind of surprising. Because that's another movie that came out earlier in the year. And we really haven't heard much else about it since then.
Yeah, I mean, it also came out, that was strike territory. Start of strikes. Takes are banned.
Takes are off the board.
It's just that the strikes are going on, so you're not getting as much press for it. You're not getting as many people talking about it online because they were standing in solidarity with the striking writers and actors. Now we move on to Best Director, Motion Picture. That's a pretty strong group.
It a big year for notable directors this year, obviously.
That's what I mean. Yeah. This also brings me to another point.
Okay.
I see Bradley Cooper here nominated for Maestro. You seen his comments recently about chairs?
Yeah, he doesn't like having chairs on set.
Bradley Cooper, anti-chair.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
It's actually funny you ask, because this is I'm in sort of a different setup, and I'm currently at a standing desk, so no chairs.
Okay.
I'm recording this Maestro style.
A little conflicted about the chair thing.
I understand what he's saying. I don't remember the full quote, but.
I talked about energy.
You should probably have chairs on set.
Energy dips there. Yeah, because look at this. I think of it this way of I think when you're talking about making a movie, you're like, okay, I get it. You're trying to keep the energy up on set, trying to get something good here. You know, so you don't want to have chairs where it's like, okay, the energy's there. You don't want people sitting down. And you're trying to make something. So you're like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, I can kind of understand that. But also, I've worked at places where, like, the boss is like, oh, no, we're not sitting down. You know, if you're sitting, there's something to get done. And, like, then when I think of it in that sense, I'm like, I just put a fucking chairs on set. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
go to work, there's no chair. You work and go to all these fucking, like, go to a restaurant. You've worked in restaurants. Yeah. I've worked in restaurants. The whole thing of like, oh, you can't be sitting. Why are you sitting? There's always something going on. Oh, no, you're like, fuck off. Just like fucking let people sit.
Or even like, well, like just like making cashiers stand. Do cashiers need to stand?
No, they don't need to stand, which is weird when you go to Aldi and they're sitting in like big comfortable chairs at the cash register. And it's just like.
And the food tastes better.
I don't know. Anyway, so we get Greta for Barbie. Yorgos, Poor Things, very exciting. Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer, Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon, Celine Strong for Past Lives. I think that one of the things that's exciting about Oppenheimer is we've seen Nolan nominated for director before. I know you kind of look at it like, oh, the contributions he's made to, you know, the current state of movies. It's like a very old approach to it. You know what I mean? Like, let's do things practically. Let's shoot on film. Let's do this. And you talk about the energy that's on the set of his movies. You've seen Robert Downey Jr. and all those guys talk about it. And I know, like, when Dunkirk came out, people were like, this might be the one that you know, he's going to get the nom that could push it because of what's done here. But I think Oppenheimer, I mean, what a beautifully directed movie Oppenheimer is.
Yeah.
And the scene, and that was the thing that I think was Oppenheimer comes out, strikes have started, so we're getting things from Nolan, you know, because the DGA wasn't on strike, but mm-hmm. not to the full extent. And once the strikes were over, people were like, if he wins, this is the best directed scene of the year. And it's the scene in the gym mm-hmm. when Oppenheimer's talking to the crowd. And oh my God, what a great scene that is. It seems like terrifying.
Yeah, it's one of the scariest scenes of the year. And I mean,
I love that scene. That mm-hmm. scene is wonderful. And I think a lot of people are like, this is when he gets nominated for the Oscar. If they're going to play clips, like that's the scene.
Yeah.
It should be.
Yeah. I wonder if they'll do that or if they'll just show Trinity or like a part of Trinity.
Trinity or even the fucking Jason Clarke in the interviews. It's just, it's what a joy. We'll get into that. We'll get into that. We got screenplay. We got Greta and Noah for Barbie, Poor Things, Tony McNamara, Nolan for Oppenheimer, Eric Roth and Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, Past Lives for Celine Strong, Anatomy of Fall, Justine Triet, and Arthur Harari. Have you seen the clip of Greta and Noah talking about casting Ryan Gosling?
No.
So they were talking, interviewing both of them. I think it was like 60 minutes.
I will say Barbie is on Max now, and I like last night I was literally I just pulled up and I was just watching like different Gosling clips
in Barbie. How could you not?
Yeah, I watched I'm Just Ken, then we went back to the Sublime, and then just the opening dance party sequence.
And so what they said was, because they asked mm-hmm. you know, with Ryan, you knew you found your Ken, did you know him beforehand? She's like, no, I didn't. I think she said I had met him before, but when we wrote the screenplay, it literally said Ken parentheses Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, I had heard that. Like, even Margot Robbie was written. I mean, she's obviously a producer, but like,
it was before he was even approached. That's mm-hmm. how the screenplay was written, and I like it because Greta is a little more. Oh yeah, no, we wrote his name right in there. Noah Baumbach's like, it's a lot of words. And I was like, yeah, every time you format the screenplay, it says Ken Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
That worked out, nailed it. Then best performance by an actor in motion picture drama.
Well, just Snoop. Like one thing on Gosling. Another thing I was just like, because yeah, like if we sat down right like 2 or 3 years ago, and we're like, okay, we're casting Ken. We don't know who the director is, right? So we don't know what type of movie it is. Yep. Right. Like, well, obviously you like throw Greta Gerwig's name on it. There's a sort of prestige to it. Like, oh my gosh. But like before this, like before you know Greta Gerwig's making it, they're making a Barbie movie. And I know this isn't the order of events it happens in, but like, say I tell you they're making a Barbie movie.
Yep.
Ryan Gosling's playing Ken.
Yep.
And I tell you Margot Robbie's playing Barbie and stuff like that makes total sense.
Correct.
But like before knowing like who the writer director is, like, imagine I told you, it was like, hey, by the way, Ryan Gosling, heard of him? He's going to be playing Ken in a movie. And you're like, yeah, I could see that. Going to get an Oscar nomination.
Yeah.
That's what's cool. Like, it seems like such a perfect casting, but like, and you remove the Greta Gerwig of it all. And obviously it had huge success at the box office and critically. So like it's very much in the conversation as we're seeing here, but like, it's just crazy to think like, oh yeah, we cast Ryan Gosling as Ken and he's heavily in the Oscar conversation. I just think that's just so fun.
Yeah. And I think cause that was the whole thing, like when it was first announced, and remember the pictures first came out of them in Venice on the rollerblades, and you're like, oh, this is an Oscar movie here. And that was kind of like the joke of it.
Mm-hmm.
I just say joke is not like anyone never thought it could get there, but you're like, oh yeah, this would be the best performance ever. And you go see it and you're like, God damn it. That fucking Ken, that Gosling is Ken. That's goddamn dynamite. That performance.
Yeah.
So I'll run through. So we got, let's see, best performance by an actor in a motion picture drama. We got B. Coops. We got Murphy for Ops. Leo for Killers. Coleman Domingo for Rustin. Andrew Scott for All of Us Strangers. And Barry Keoghan. Is it Keoghan? Every time I read it, I get very upset and get very worried I'm saying it wrong.
Yeah, that I wish I could say with the full confidence. Keegan is what I sort of default to, but I feel like it might be something a little bit different.
Imagine him and Riley Keough in a movie together. Be nightmare all over the place. For Saltburn, performance by an actress in a motion picture, Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon, Carey Mulligan, Maestro, Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall, Annette Bening for Niad, Greta Lee, Past Lives, and Kaylee Spaney for Priscilla. Annette Bening, where's she been?
Where has Annette Bening been? I mean, I feel like she was in Captain Marvel.
Oh yeah, she was in Captain Marvel, and then before that, she was in
was 2019.
She,
so, I don't...
but she was in that movie with Greta, 20th Century Women. Annette Bening's in that, I believe.
Yeah, she is. That was all. Was that? That might have been. I'm trying to think of the years because that's 2019. So that's 2016. So 20th Century Women. It's not. Yeah, that's the Mike Mills movie. She was in Death on the Nile, 2022.
Where we now.
So that's sort of. She's tech. Apparently, she's in the Marvels, which I saw, and I don't know if that's true, or like maybe it's like she's in it for a split second.
Been nominated for four Oscars.
Like, she's good. I mean,
the kids are all right.
And she played, she played Diane Feinstein, did she not?
She did play Feinstein, which is easy. You just sit there and look dead. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, that's pretty,
yeah,
that's pretty easy. You know what I mean? Like, she probably should not have been nominated because she looked like a live person.
Right. She was, yeah. I mean, to be clear, this was like early 2000s Feinstein. So a little bit more pep in the step. We could nominate it. Too lively of a performance.
You know, obviously she gets her first Best Actress nom in The Grifters in 91. Then what I remember seeing her first in is American Beauty in 2000. I did watch a movie. I didn't finish it. I put a movie on recently that Annette Bening was in. I believe it was The Siege with Denzel Washington. And when I read you the description of this movie, you're going to be like, yeah, I get that. I get why you put that on. The secret, The secret U.S. abduction of a suspected terrorist leads to a wave of terrorist attacks in New York City, which leads to the declaration of martial law. 1998. This is like a
prime, it's Zwick. This is, okay.
Yeah, this is a prime Nick type movie here.
It's like a TNT.
A TNT Sunday classic. So after I watched my 4K copy of The Fugitive, that's what I was in the mood for. That's why I threw the siege on. Performance by an actress in a motion picture, musical, or comedy. Look at this. Fantasia
Barrino. Yeah.
The Color Purple. Good for her.
Yeah, that rules. That's such an exciting nomination.
That's awesome.
I'm going to go on the record. I mean, like, my stock is, I'm going to be clear with you. I haven't really followed Fantasia Barrino's career much, but I remember she was I think the third season of American Idol. I remember I saw her. I saw her audition and I was like, her, she's my favorite. I think she went on and won that year. So like I got in on the ground floor.
And I like that. And I'm going to go ahead and make a declaration here. This podcast, we're pro Fantasia Barrino. Just want you to know, I don't want there to be any mistakes about it. So we have Fantasia Barrino for The Color Purple. Jennifer Lawrence, as you mentioned, No Hard Feelings. Natalie Portman for May, December. Alma Poyatzi, sorry for butchering that, for Fallen Leaves. Margot Robbie for Barbie. And Emma Stone for Poor Things. Best performance by an actor in a motion picture, musical, or comedy. Nicolas Cage, Dream Scenario. This Nicolas Cage thing... Nicolas Cage is fascinating. And I think everyone who watches movies knows that. What I love about Nicolas Cage is I love that he does these insane, like, shitty movies. But then, like, it's been every year kind of consistently for the past 4 or 5 years where you're like, okay, he's in Mandy. Mandy gets kind of like, it doesn't get an Oscar buzz thing, but it gets the critical acclaim. And then you get Pig, which gets all this buzz. And then you have, what was the other one? God damn it. Mandy, Pig.
The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Thank you.
This year? That might have been this
year. Yeah. It was this year or last year. But then you have that, and now you have him get nominated for this movie Dream Scenario. And I think that's a really kind of cool and fascinating thing about him. This is not one of those... I think this is the wrong, using Bruce Willis is the wrong example after knowing what he's going through. But you know, you get those actors that were huge at some point and now they're just in like a bunch of shitty movies that don't do well or straight to DVD type things. I like that Nicolas Cage pops up every year and is like, just remember who the fuck I am.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like also he gives off the vibe. I don't know if it's based on quotes or anything that I read about, like he always kind of, you know, even if the material was below his quality per se, you know, like he kind of always gave it his all. Like he wasn't sleeping through it.
He doesn't phone it in.
Exactly. So that's always been admirable, even if it's a movie that, you know, might not be that good, but he also gets these fun little things. Did you hear what he said recently? He's like, I'm going to make a couple more movies. Maybe like 2 or 3 more movies. And then I think he's transitioning into TV is what he said.
Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, interesting to see what he ends up doing. But yeah, I thought that was interesting that he's.
Have you seen Dream Scenario?
Dream Scenario, I have not. I've heard good things about it. Do you know what it's about?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, he's a college professor. And then I guess one day he wakes up and everyone at the school or even in the
all these people like, keep seeing them in their dreams.
In their dreams. Yeah.
Why I bring this up real quick though is I don't see this resulting in an Oscar nomination.
No, I yeah.
For a different reason than probably most people. Nicolas Cage has, and I can check on this, I believe, 2 Oscar nominations.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In his illustrious career. So let's go ahead and double. I'm going to double check before I go into the next thing.
Because I mean, we've covered one of the films.
Correct. He's won an Oscar, and he's been nominated. IMDb is loading very slow. Apparently, everyone needs to look at IMDb right now. So take note of that for our recording time.
Are there any ads? Any for your considerations on the old IMDb page?
Yes, there is. Poor Things is across the top.
There you go. Poor Things.
So Nicolas Cage wins in 1996 for Best Actor in a Leading Role for Leaving Las Vegas. Nicolas Cage's other nomination is for Adaptation. Nicolas Cage does not get nominated for Oscars unless he's in a film where he is playing a screenwriter. He is 2 for 2. He's a screenwriter in Leaving Las Vegas, and he wins. And then, obviously, he is a screenwriter playing Charlie Kaufman and Charlie Kaufman's twin brother in Adaptation, and gets another nomination. And I do think that that's kind of fascinating that we have an actor whose only Oscar buzz comes around when they're playing a character who happens to be a Hollywood screenwriter. Dream scenario. Unless he's teaching, could you imagine if in Dream Scenario the class he taught was screenwriting? And then he got nominated again.
He would get the nod.
That's what I'm saying. So we'll see. Timothy Chalamet, The Shams, Wonka.
It's Wonka season.
It really is Wonka season. Matt Damon for Air. Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers. Joaquin Phoenix for Bo is Afraid, and Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. Best Supporting Actor, Motion Picture, Willem Dafoe for Poor Things, De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon, Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, Gosling for Barbie, Melton for May, December, Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things.
It's going to be interesting because the Oscars, I think, only nominate 5. I think Globes just said.
Nominate 5, and this also has a combination for supporting of the drama and the musicals.
Right. Yeah. And Globes are just like, fuck it. Six noms. But I will, it's interesting to see, because I think you look at this, I think I don't think there's anyone not listed here that gets a nomination for supporting.
Okay.
I think supporting is kind of these, I think maybe Dafoe misses out on the Oscar. And I think we get the De Niro, Downey Jr., Gosling, Melton, Ruffalo.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, they love Dafoe. Dafoe always kind of sneaks in, like, somehow.
Love Dafoe. Best Supporting Actress, Motion Picture, Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple. We had Jodie Foster in here, Julianne Moore, Rosamund Pike, and Divine Joy Randolph. What do you think about supporting actress?
I think it's locked up already.
Yeah, and who do you think it's for?
I think Divine Joy Randolph is like winning everything so far.
Okay,
she won a lot of critics' awards.
What a great Thanksgiving holiday season movie, The Holdover. I have not seen. You've seen?
It is. It's like fully. I watch it. I'm like, that's going in the Christmas movie catalog. It's fantastic.
And I think that's I like that movie has that feeling to it.
Yeah, and it's
I remember seeing the trailer and being like, "Oh, this thing looks like it's gonna fucking rip."
Yeah, it's good. It's good, and it kind of like goes away. I feel like I didn't necessarily expect it to, not like any grand sort of way, just like in terms of the story, and the relationships between the characters. But yeah, I thought it was excellent. We don't need to go.
We got the gist of it. I'm gonna stop sharing my screen now.
But actually, while you do that, let's cut away to a quick ad break.
Okay.
Hi. Have you seen Killers of the Flower Moon? It is monumental. Go see it for your consideration. All right, we're back. Oh, soundboard.
You like that? Yeah, monumental, obviously, as you can see from all the ads there. I would just like to say real quick, I want to say a shout out to all the listeners right now. I see some conversations going on in our chat. for the people that are listening to this after it's been posted on Spotify podcasts. We wish you could be here while we're recording. The people that are here, great to have you.
You know what I was thinking? It's something that I hadn't thought of, and we'll have to maybe consider it next year, is the idea of doing a company Christmas party episode.
Okay.
Every year, you know, companies hold their big end of year Christmas party. And I'm like, how can we do that with a podcast? Get a lot of the same faces in the same room. And maybe that's like the game night thing that we've talked about, where we play like movie games or something like that.
I think that would be pretty fun. Get everyone in here all at one time, and it's just a party.
I mean, it might not be a podcast episode, a viable podcast episode, but it would be a good live stream.
Yeah, it'd be a nice fun live stream to do here. So what do you think we get into next? Do you think we talk about the year, or you want to go over the syllabus? Or I think we finish with the syllabus.
Yeah, yeah. Because the Golden Globes is part of the end of the year thing. Like, what's another, like, what do you want to talk about in terms of the end of the year? Because, you know, I feel like for the most part, which we'll get into with the syllabus, there's still movies to be seen.
There's, you know, always movies to be seen.
In terms of like this year, like I always like try to like get as much under the wire so I can kind of like, kind of come up with what my final top 10 list is for the year. But for the most part, in terms of how we do this podcast, that mostly just comes up around the Oscars, because you don't watch the movies of the year until you go on a straight binge in January. At least that's what the trend has been.
That has been the trend. And you know what? It's that stupid, like, you know, work's been nuts.
Yeah,
there's been a lot of things. Yeah, so I think a lot of it is, you know what? I sit down on the couch. It's like late, and I'm like, I want to put something on. And the problem I run into is, it's like, I really want to watch this. Let me put it on. But if I feel like I'm not going to be able to give it 100% of my attention, I don't put it on, and that fucking ends up screwing me. Because I'll be like, you know what? I'm not going to put something new on, because if I don't pay attention all the way, I don't want to be missing shit. So what I do is I'll be like, let me throw something on I've seen before. And then like an asshole, 10 minutes in, that's it. That's all I'm watching. And I'm like, I should have just watched the thing.
Right.
I have to get better.
Okay, again, this is not trial, and this is not an intervention.
So once again, as I defend myself for my combination trial and intervention, I want to do better. But coming to the end of the year, I know you mentioned, like, let's talk about some of our favorite things.
Okay.
From the year. I'm looking for how you said it, which was, we pick our five favorite things from movies this year. And, right, you know,
I did have that idea. I forgot I had that idea.
It's a good idea. I like that idea. So I thought about it.
Okay.
And I don't know, do you have five? I mean, this was your idea.
This is my idea. I'll come up with a trial. Yeah. If you have some, you go first, because I'm looking at this. I spent so much time coming up with my, like, the syllabus and reasons for you to watch all the stuff. That I didn't actually, but I'll be able to, I'm looking at this list. I'll be able to like come up with five different things.
Yeah. So,
in no particular order, but
no. Hey Austin, Austin in the chat, you know, we just asked about five favorites from the year. Austin said Barbenheimer. So I'll start there. Mm-hmm. So one of mine was going to be going to see Oppenheimer the day it opened, and it being the first movie I got to see at the Chinese theater on Hollywood Boulevard. Whoa, boy. What a movie palace. That's one of those things where when they talk about the old movie palaces, and you're like, I don't know what you're talking about. Walk into that fucking place. because Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's great. They got like the curtains. It's like,
oh, you know, we did the 10 a.m. thing. As I've me and Kate had tickets in the second row, and we were kind of worried about it. It's like, hey, we got this double feature thing going on. How are we going to do this? Bought 10 a.m. tickets, and Drew got over to Hollywood like 9 a.m., parked, got in line, went in. And I mean, it is what a, it's a beautiful building. The theater is gorgeous, but that entire experience of being in the second row and watching that fucking thing on that giant screen, it was something else. It really was. You know, when you get to the Trinity test, just I had chills thinking about it. Like, it was one of those things where I was sitting there and I was like, I cannot believe that I am in Hollywood right now at the Chinese theater, the day this movie opens, watching it on this IMAX screen. Mm-hmm. How lucky am I? And it's one of those, it was just one of those, like, and it was in the middle of it too. Like in the middle of watching this movie. And I was just like, this is why people make movies.
Mm-hmm.
This is why movies are made, is for viewing experiences like that. And I also think that, as I told you, our projector went out at some point,
right,
during the movie.
Uh-huh.
And someone ran down, you know, this guy ran down there and explained how long the reel of film was and the generator and how to keep it cool and blah, blah, blah. And they're going to get it back on. And I think it was also everyone that was there knew what they were there to see, that experience that they were there to have, that I really love that when that happened, it wasn't like, oh, what the fuck is fucking bull? Like, the guy came down and said, I'm going to get it running again. A minute later, it was back on. Everyone clapped and you were back in the movie. And then, it was just being in a fucking, that packed theater. It was awesome. So I got going to see Oppenheimer at the Chinese theater. That's the first one. That's the first one on my list. What do you got?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just like kind of piggyback onto that and what Austin said in the chat of Barbenheimer. Just the whole thing, like, you know, something that I constantly, you know, whether it's on this podcast or not, like, I sort of alluded to it earlier in the episode about the nature of movies, the place of movies in the culture.
Yep.
And how, you know, they're not as big anymore. They're not as central. Movie stars aren't as central to our culture anymore. And, you know, it always, any of these things has their time in the sun. And I've always just been like kind of just bummed out about the fact, because like movies are like my favorite thing in the whole world. So,
yeah.
But what Barbenheimer did is that it felt like a moment where it was central. At least, even, I mean, I'm in sort of a bubble, whether it's, you know, with my own, my friends, with the podcast that we have, and, you know, like film Twitter and stuff like that. Like, there's obviously a bubble. So I don't really like it. But I mean, you look at the stats, like Barbie and Oppenheimer were huge. Like, crushed. A lot of people went to see them. So it was a big part of it. And it felt, and it's like that thing that we talk about with movies, like feeling like events. And Nolan kind of always feels like an event. But Barbie was also going to feel like an event. And having those two combined sort of just made it, at least for a weekend, felt like that this was the biggest thing happening culturally in, at least the, like, at least in the United States, like, at that time. And just movies don't really do that anymore. They're not really the thing where it's like, you look at it, it's like, oh, look how many people went and saw, like, any old, like, random movie. But, like, or even like, you watch, like, if you, like, you know, we talk about Seinfeld, you're a big Seinfeld fan. Like, how many times do they go to the movies in an episode of Seinfeld? It's like, it was like the thing.
Yeah.
It's just not necessarily the thing anymore. And that's why, like, Barbenheimer kind of felt like that thing. We went and saw Oppenheimer. We went out, and then that's when you met up with us. We got some lunch, and got some drinks, and we were just like talking about the movie, talking about what we thought about the movie, but also getting excited for the next movie that we were about to go see in like an hour.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, it was just incredible. It's just, yeah.
Like Austin just said, it's one of the things that he loves about the social connection of Instagram, Twitter, whatever it is that we can create moments as a giant community, creating a monumental thing. Like we can create a cultural phenomenon just because they are memes almost. And being part of that was incredible. And I think that's it too. Cause you can look back at like Avengers Endgame comes out, biggest thing on the fucking planet going to see that. But what made Oppenheimer and Barbie so special was these were not, this was not a sequel. This was not a, oh, this is wrapping up a story here. Yes, Barbie's huge. Everyone knows what Barbie is. But to pair it with Oppenheimer, a 3-hour biographical motion picture about the atom bomb and the man who helped create it. To have those two things on such an opposite end of the spectrum be such a big deal. That was created out of, you know, Nolan leaves Warner Brothers because they're fucking assholes. Goes to Universal. Then Warner Brothers goes, we're going to release Barbie the same day. And then kind of turning it into this whole, and it, Austin's right. It was like a meme. It was like, oh, I can't wait. What a double feature this is. And that being created out of that is what made it special. And I think the other thing of, I have separate, so just separately on my list, I have, you know, I have Barbie meeting up with you guys. Because you all did it together. I did Oppenheimer separate and then met up with you. Mm-hmm. But I think it was also going to the theater and seeing someone who's going to see Barbie dressed in all black and a black suit. And I'm like, oh, this person has seen Oppenheimer today. Or going to Oppenheimer in the morning and someone's wearing a pink dress with this or a pink outfit.
Cowboy hat.
Cowboy hat. And I'm like, oh, these people, when they're done here, they are going to see Barbie. And I think that crossover is what made it so special and so exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I to go also just like, go back to what you were saying about the event, about like when you brought up Avengers Endgame and how it ties in. Like that feels like probably the last time, like going to see, like, I feel like people, I wanted to see Barbie and Oppenheimer before I heard anything about it. And it was like the almost, and like, we were glad that we got to see it that first weekend, but it was also kind of like, all right, I got to like mute words on Twitter so I don't hear about it.
Yes.
But yeah, that the whole like dressing up to, you know, we see it in smaller ways recently, like the kids going to dress up in suits to go see like Minions Rise of Gru.
Remember that? That was awesome.
Yeah. But even like that just adds to the event feel of it. Like this is an event. We're all dressing up for this event. You know, we bought shirts. We bought custom Barbenheimer shirts for it. Like it was just such a cool thing. And it was like they had the Barbie box in the theater. You can go take a picture inside the Barbie box.
Hell yeah, dude.
That was incredible. And I guess I should tie in for number two for me, or the second thing. Obviously, like I said, not really ranked, but the Gosling performance in Barbie.
Yeah.
Is in top five favorite things for the year. You know, going into it, I remember they were like, oh, I heard he's like really good in it. Like there was like the talks like that going around before you go and see it. And I was like, I'm not really sure what to expect overall from the movie. You know, what does a Greta Gerwig Barbie movie look like? And you go and you watch it and just the comedic performance. I just had so much fun watching him just bring that to life and like kind of just like I don't want to say steal the movie because I think what Greta does and what Margot does is just so impressive and less showy but just him having it kind of just feels like when they were making that movie they kind of had like this magic trick that they probably just, I think, I just imagine watching, we will, like, and I watched some of the behind the scenes stuff yesterday. Like, I just imagine, like, them making this movie and kind of seeing what he was bringing and coming up with. I feel like everyone making that movie kind of felt like, oh, this is just, he's incredible. And I felt like that translated. I just, cause I feel like, you know, he is in a lot of the movie. And it's just, yeah, I just had so much fun. I laugh out loud every time I watch any clip from it. And, you know, you have the musical performances, you have the dance sequence. There's just so much to go on about. Like, it's like crazy. You think about, like, oh, like the guy who played Ken's getting nominated for an Academy Award. It's like,
yeah,
there's a, like, and it is a goofball performance and it's a comedic performance, which you don't see as much of, but there is so much about it too, with his performance and with, like I said, the musical and the dancing aspects. There's a lot to it.
Is it, it's almost like, yeah. And I love that it's that kind of performance is getting a nomination. And I think we always kind of go back to that too, where you're like, you remember when Marissa Tomei won the Academy Award for My Cousin Vinny?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't remember when it happened, but
yeah, I was in junior high, dickhead. Like, shout out to Die Hard. Not that guy, though. All right, just so you know, that guy directs movies for, like, Ben Shapiro's Daily Wire movie thing now. That one FBI agent from...
yes, you told, yeah, you told
yeah.
me.
Yeah. But it's like, when you get those performances that are... Like, when we look the other day, we were talking, and we talked about, like, The Fugitive. And you're like, Tommy Lee Jones wins the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor in The Fugitive. And you look at it, and you're like, this performance does not get nominated if you go, if you know, 5 years after that. And we always talk about, like, In the Line of Fire, which is Malkovich getting nominated for being the villain in a political thriller movie starring Clint Eastwood. It's mm-hmm. even crazier when you look and go, Tommy Lee Jones won that year, was nominated in the same category as that Malkovich performance, and they beat out Ray Fiennes for his performance in fucking Schindler's List.
Yeah, I know. We talked about it on the last episode.
Yeah, that's mind-blowing. And so I think you always get those interesting ones there. And I think it's almost the same thing where this almost goes to that Captain Jack Sparrow territory of getting nominated for an Academy Award.
Robert Downey Jr., in Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder. Yeah, that's what I mean. These kind of weird performances that get the recognition, and they should. Mm-hmm. And yeah, no, it's always so exciting when mm-hmm. shit like that happens.
Yeah. And now, like Tomei wins, right?
Yep.
Which is incredible. RDJ doesn't win for Tropic Thunder. I don't think Gosling is going to win for Barbie. I think he'll get a nom. I think he's kind of, I feel like I said, like we said, the supporting actors are kind of a lock there. But yeah, it's fun when something like that comes in, especially a movie as big as it is. You're going to have people tuning in to watch, you know, the Oscars because the movie that people have seen is so heavily, you know, spotlighted. And what's also important is him being nominated for song.
Yes.
Because that's great for the show if they get, which is hopefully he performs it. I think there's like three Barbie songs nominated for best song, I think, at the Globes. So we'll see what happens with the Oscars. If it's like that, I feel like they'll probably do like a, you know, a medley performance sort of thing.
A boy.
But that's good. And you get stars.
A boy can dream.
Well, what else you got on your list?
I'm actually working on part of my list right now.
Okay, well, I'm
trying to pull something up to see if I can, oh boy,
play it.
Yes.
Okay,
so go ahead, what do you got next?
I'm looking at like the list of the movies I've watched this year. I'm thinking about sequences, and you know, we talked about like favorite sequence of the year.
Yes.
And like we brought up the Oppenheimer sequence, which is definitely up there for me. What I'm thinking here, I brought it up on the last episode. I think Barbie has some excellent sequences, but I kind of want to like go to different movies, highlight some other movies. I'm gonna say the car chase. Oh, you know what? It's tough. I'm like in between a couple Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning sequences.
Okay.
The yellow car chase scene, or even the airport chase.
Yeah. I almost put that on last night, but for that same dumb thing of like, no, I want to sit and watch this again. Like, right. I don't want it, but I want to sit and watch this fucking movie again. Mm-hmm. But yes, I agree. The yellow car chase scene is incredible. I think it's good about that chase scene too, because they use the stairs from Spain, I believe, is in that. And there is a sequence also that takes place on those stairs from the 10th Fast and the Furious movie, and having the comparison of how things should look and be done. I think that's a great lesson in
how to do it versus how not to do it.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think almost we'll get to this. We'll get to this later. I'm just about ready to show you what number. Let me see. So
number three.
Yes. Actually, you know what? This year before the Oscars, me and Kate went and walked around Hollywood. That's on there.
Okay.
That's because that's like, come on. Yeah. I 2 years in a row. You know what I mean? I did it with you before I moved out. That's one of those things. That's a pinch me moment for me.
That you're outside the Dolby Theater. Yeah.
You can't like, because I remember like when I first got into like my love of movies, it's funny because it started, I think, with being friends with past guest James Milano. Talking about movies and, you know, watching certain things, and then also looking at what screenplays look like. And then we started making little short films, and well, it was always, okay, the Oscars are coming up. We always did our Oscar list. That's why I started doing it, was with the J Dash. To go from that to, and now I'm walking through Hollywood and they're happening. So I think that's like such a pinch me moment. And it's not it's not because of one movie, but it's just like, I get to be here. So that was incredible. And, you know, fucking fighter jets flying over Hollywood Boulevard as part of like the whole Maverick thing of it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so that was so, it wasn't even like, oh, I saw this celebrity or I saw this, but it's just one of those things where, just you're on the outside, the stars are rolling up on the red carpet. The same time that's happening, someone is protesting along the street about, I don't know, violence in Hollywood movies. I don't remember what she was talking about at the same time. And she was
calling for more.
Yeah. There's just not enough violence in movies these days. No, that was one of them. That was one of those things where it's like, damn, dude. I loved this night, and now I'm outside the theater, and then doing that, and then getting to go home and watch it. I think that also makes it fun too, because you're far away and you're like, wow, look at that. That looks like a gorgeous flowing green dress. And then you spot it on the TV and you're like, oh my God, holy shit. That was Laura Linney. You know what I mean? Whatever. Like, I don't know, whoever it was there that, and I think that is something that's so, it's so cool, because it's like, I watch this as like as a viewer, as a fan. And now I'm outside the theater, right there. I can see the Oscar statues outside. I can see the helicopter coverage. A fighter jets going, it's fucking movies. You know what I mean? That's one of those moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember the first time I went and did it when I was interning out here. I think I saw Mario Lopez in a black SUV heading towards the Oscars at one point. And then I went over to that corner that I brought you and Nikki over to when we went over there a couple of years ago. And I think when I first went there, I think I saw Hugh Grant. I think that was the most notable person I had seen.
Hugh Grant. Because
I mean, a lot of
about having a press tour. Hugh Grant saw Ridley Scott and said, hold on one second, my friend. I was miserable every single second of this movie that has not come out yet.
Incredible. Incredible. We need a Ridley Scott movie starring like Tommy Lee Jones and Hugh Grant.
Did he ask her if they were in a scene together? Did he ask her that?
that's what the mouth readers were saying. Like, do we have any scenes together? That's incredible.
Yeah.
Just get our grumps, get three of our biggest press tour grumps just on a movie together and have them do a press tour.
Why is he so grumpy?
Tommy Lee Jones?
Yeah.
I don't know. Guy's an Oscar for a, his guy's one of the coolest Oscar wins of all time.
And
line up.
I mean,
it's actually crazy to think like it's crazy to think like a movie we covered, Batman Forever.
Yep.
You watch the performance that he gives in that movie.
Yep.
As Two-Face. And to think that that guy looked at Jim Carrey and said, I can no longer sanction your buffoonery. Did you see what you were doing? Like, I mean, he gave a famously chill performance himself in that movie. That's the total epitome of like clashing styles of how you approach acting and stuff like that. And how obviously a serious actor can do something like zany and wild like that. But whereas like Jim Carrey is like probably literally the Riddler.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, is there any word on Tommy Lee? Like, I know we joke about like if you, it's actually the blank check thing of like if you ask Tommy Lee Jones if he was in the first Captain America movie, he'd be like, I don't think so.
Right.
Like, there's no way I was in that movie.
But yeah, and the thing is, though, like, he's good in that movie.
Very good in that movie.
But that's the thing with Tommy Lee Jones is if he's just grumpy and doesn't want to be there, he's playing a grump in the movie anyway. So it just works. Like, I mean, he doesn't even have to do anything.
Yeah. And he's fascinating. We should cover Tommy Lee Jones.
We should have him on.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be easy. And he'll definitely remember it. Tommy Lee Jones is great. You know, my whole thing, I haven't watched it yet this year, so that'll probably come up. My No Country for Old Men. Javier Bardem is, you know, that performance is like one for the ages. And it's one of those things where every time I go back and watch it, that performance doesn't lose any steam. Javier Bardem, this is not what I'm saying, but every time I watch it, that Tommy Lee Jones performance moves up on my list of just favorite performances ever.
Yeah.
Ever, ever. I mean, it is like,
I mean, he's the through line of that movie.
The fucking movie's about him.
Yeah.
He's the old man in the country.
Yeah, the country's passing him by, yeah.
And it's that his monologue at the end of that movie, it's like every time I watch it, every rewatch of that movie, I'm like, whew, man, this guy is fucking cooking in this thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, I have my next one. I have it. I believe I can finally participate in the podcast.
All right. This is your third one. I forgot what you're stalling. Haven't even gotten to the syllabus yet. We're an hour and 10 in.
Yeah, we're doing good though. We're doing good. I think we're gonna be okay. I just want to pull up everything. I wanted to have. Look at this. The proof's in the pudding. Oh my God, my ears are getting fucking.
By God.
By God. Okay. I gotta open a bunch of different things here in order to properly prep for what I'm pulling up. So that's what I'm current. All right. That's currently what I'm working on. All right. So I'm going to share my screen.
Okay. I'm ready for it.
Boom, boom, boom. Okay. So, the Hollywood strikes.
Mm-hmm.
Not the, obviously going on strike is, you know, not a, you can make it fun, but it sucks when you have to get to that point. But I was also on strike, you know, the hospital I represent was on strike the same week, you know, during one of the weeks that the actors was on strike. So that handsome fellow there with a megaphone and a vest with his fist in the air, surrounded by members of SEIU UHW, the healthcare workers, and also SAG-AFTRA. This was insane. Mm-hmm. This was, you were there.
This
that
moment
day.
In particular was,
yeah,
was quite special. Yeah.
Yes. That was a pinch me moment. That was another one of them where once the writers went on strike and the actors went on strike, they were on strike across the street from one of the places I work at. So I stopped over there every week, check on them, see what they needed, if they needed anything, because that's what this is all about. And they returned the favor in a huge way. And that was, you know, I was always like, hey, it's going to be great. We're going to be across the street from each other. And on the last day of the strike, you know, we came up with this idea of at 11 o'clock, we're going to cross the street together instead of just, you know, back and forth. We're going to cross the street together. And this is one of the photos from that. And that was like, whew, man, that was one of the coolest things that I've ever been a part of. I feel so lucky that this happened. Mm-hmm. My gratitude to all of the actors, the Writers Guild that helped me out. That is like, whew, this was like the first moment when we were on strike there that I teared up. Cause I looked up and I was like, holy shit. I'm still tired from that contract campaign and bargaining that contract.
Yeah.
But this moment here is one of those things where like, I get to look back, I get to tell Pete, like, this is what that looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And none of these people had to do this, but it was an understanding of we're both fighting for the same things.
Right.
I also, let's see if I can, I got to share again. Let's see if I can get this up here.
While you do that. Yeah. Yeah, there we go.
You know, Jason Winston George, who was on mm-hmm. the negotiating committee for SAG-AFTRA, Dr. Bailey's husband, on Grey's Anatomy, stopped by. And that too. Like, hey, man, how's it going? I said, hey, how's it going? I'm the union rep for this hospital. He said, perfect. Can we go on Instagram Live real quick and tell people what's going on? Absolutely. So now I'm on Instagram Live here talking about what's going on at my strike. He didn't have to come over and do that. But he did, and he talked to my workers. He talked to my members. He talked to the healthcare workers in there. And I think it's hilarious because one of the things he said was, I am not a healthcare worker, but I play one on TV sometimes, which is just like a funny That's line.
Yeah.
So, you know, having the chance to meet someone like that, I think was incredible. Here, you know, I don't have the sound, but here is some of the wonderful people. As we got ready to cross the street here, I was elated. This is Angelina, one of the best union reps I've ever met in my life. I'm going to share finally what crossing the street looked like because they couldn't make sharing any of this easy for me. So I apologize. But no, this is like, come on. You know what I mean? Having hundreds of people like this block the street off for the short time back and forth. You have everyone from housekeepers to respiratory therapists, surgical techs, and actors in Hollywood coming together for this moment. And that was just like, yeah, that was looking at the hard work of all of these people coming together for one moment. And that one moment was something that was to help me succeed in what I was doing. Thank you once again to the Screen Actors Guild. I am indebted to you. I thank you so much for the help there. That is a moment that I could talk about for the rest of my life. It makes me emotional now thinking about it.
Yeah, was like, I can tell. Dude, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was.
It's awesome. It's so cool.
It was, you know, you do 6 months of prep for a contract campaign.
Right.
The actual negotiations took 6 months.
Yeah.
It took a strike. And looking at it, it's just like, oh boy, that was special. So that's my fourth.
Okay. Yeah. I'll add on to it. And like, I wasn't even thinking about that one because I was just looking at the movies I saw, but that moment, and obviously we'll see down the line what it means, what it ends up meaning, how it affects everything about what this business
is. This is a moment in the history of television and cinema and will change things going forward, and being able to not only be there, but to be a part of it. Words cannot describe what that's like.
It's incredible. And that, in the moment, like you said, where both sides just kept crossing. And that was just, it was just so, so cool. I had flown in from my honeymoon the day before.
And
I was like, you're like, oh, like you want to come out? And I was like, I'm tired. And I'm thinking, but I was like, you know, we made it out. And yeah, obviously I wasn't nearly as tired as people who have, like you, who have been sort of working endless hours trying to get these things done. But to be there was so special, and I'm so glad that I didn't say, oh, I need to sit down, I need to have like a rest day, and then I'll be back out on the line later. I'm glad that I sort of like forced myself to get up and go across town to do it. And like,
it was so perfect too. When you came, you came on the perfect day.
It was such a cool day. Yeah.
The final day, it was such a, And also, now that we're talking about, you know, we're talking about the strikes and the actors, a quick shout out, to SAG member and also, the mayor of Burbank, Constantine Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the strike line with us every fucking day of the week.
Yeah.
Every single day, the mayor of Burbank came out there. And even when our strike was done and we were back at the negotiating table, we got together and I gave him a walkthrough of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of that was to, you know, talk to the workers about the strike, but also to put pressure on the hospital to keep going forward there. We had an issue with the police the day before, at the end of our fourth day, where fucking prick is what it was. Police departments have labor liaisons because there's laws and rights that workers have while they're on strike there. So the powers that be in the hospital kept calling the chief of police. So the chief of police decided that he was going to call someone that was not one of the labor liaisons that I had been working with all week there. Mm-hmm. Marching, chanting, everything was fine. They got this guy involved and he was up for a promotion. So his fucking ego had to get the best of him. And he just, he threatened us. We knew what our rights were and what we were allowed to do. And he threatened us and said that we were being difficult, but we were not going to concede anything in this fight that we were on here, especially not to a man by the name of Fletcher. So ain't going to work that way, bud. But what he told us was the next day was, I'm going to have extra patrol on you guys. Now, remember, these are the people that take care of the elderly, the sick people coming into surgery, coming out of surgery, barely making a living wage, and this motherfucker is going to tell me that he's bringing extra patrol out, and one person steps out of line, they're getting arrested.
Right.
And luckily, we had resources that helped us calm that situation down. Mm-hmm. So I just want to, a quick shout out to the mayor. And real quick, they're not up yet. They're not up yet, Jared. But
okay.
I know you've seen them. But they're not up yet in the studio. But
we got them framed.
I got them framed. So we got a SAG-AFTRA picket sign on here. Writers Guild, execs could start by writing good checks. I did not write this. I don't know who wrote this.
Right. We'd love to give them credit. especially considering what we're talking about.
But you know, if you see this and you know which writer wrote this, what, Jerry, you'd never know who this could be.
Yeah, some good handwriting.
It could have been Orson Welles. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Well, Orson Welles famously, there's a lot of contention about what he wrote and what authorship he had over certain movies.
And then obviously,
i.e. Mank.
That's what I'm saying. Obviously, to round it out.
Yeah.
From my strike there. So I'm super excited to get these on the wall. One of not just my, not just a great moment of the year, one of the proudest moments of my life. And so, yeah, there's that.
Well, yeah, one of the proudest moments of your life. So that's why it falls on number four on the list. I'm just kidding. No, that's incredible. I remember like going to your stuff, being across the street, always going over to the Disney line. I would go on Fridays over to Netflix. Netflix was fun. It was like it was always like a party. Like it was interesting to see like different. First time I went to Disney, it was like, oh, like I think I overheard people being like talking about it and be like, Disney is kind of the more chill, like, you know, people who just want to, you know, walk the line and just like, you know, just like in a more, but then you go like to Netflix on Friday and they have like DJs or musicians and it's kind of like a party. And that was always fun. I always enjoyed it.
Cause I don't think people expect that.
No. Right? Like, that was the key thing is like, we're like, yeah, this sucks. We hate that we have to do this. But being there on a Friday, I just always had such a strong belief that they were going to get the deal that they wanted. Close to it. Just because there was never going to be a point where it was like, oh, they're going to lose steam. Like these are like actors and writers are used to sort of just like taking second jobs and struggling to just to sort of make ends meet while they chase their dream. But then you go to this thing and it's like, I'm having fun every time I'm here at Netflix on a Friday. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to want to stop doing that. I'm not going to slow down.
Yeah. Like, I think, like, you know, I've been to strikes before. You've been to strikes before. You were at, you know, when Dad was on strike.
Got started young.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Get him started young. You know what I mean? But I know even my members getting ready to go out on strike. You know, when you're risking a paycheck, not risking, when you're not, you know, you're not getting paid for these 5 days you're out here on strike. Mm-hmm. And I kept telling them, like, they're like, oh, what do we got to do? And I'm like, trust me, get out there. We're going to have music. We're going to have a DJ. Just because the motherfuckers inside the building don't appreciate you doesn't mean that when we get out here, this is not going to be fun. We're going to have fun doing this.
Yeah.
And see them like, oh my God, I had no idea that this is what it was like. And I'm like, yeah, labor actions can be fucking great. And yeah. I even had members of the Screen Actors Guild come over and go, hey, I just wanted to let you know that it's really inspiring seeing you guys out here. And I'm like, I got a guy that's been on strike for 109 days. Watching us on strike on our third day, and that's what's inspiring. Like that really that meant a lot to me.
But an injection of energy too. Like the music that yours was always great.
And that's what it's about. Like we're fighting for something that is important here. But we're gonna do it the way that we want to do it. And I think that's what made it so exciting.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Next one for me. So I'm going to go along with what some of the people had in the chat, and no, it's not Bumblebee's performance in Transformers, The Rise of Beast.
I heard it's good.
Yeah. Like total snub at the Globes this year.
Is that Bumblebee's best performance?
No, it's.
Or is Bumblebee's best performance?
It's probably Bumblebee, or even the first Transformers. I have no idea. I cannot rate.
Okay.
I cannot.
Okay. Rate. Okay. This is a different episode, different time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Top five Bumblebee performances.
There's enough movies. I'm going to go with Past Lives. So.
Okay.
So, our friends who are in the chat, Kieran Austin, for Kira's 30th birthday, they all went and to go see Creed in IMAX down there. And we were in Boston, I believe, at the time. So I missed out on it. So I was like, hey,
yes,
we'll make up for it. I'll come down to Orange County and we'll go see a movie. And we saw Past Lives when it came out. So I drove down there. We went to go see it. It was so good. The movie ended, and I remember Kira sitting in the chair, and I hope she's okay with me sharing this, but she was like, it was like a similar thing that I think that Kate did to you when you saw Interstellar. I was like, I need a moment.
Okay.
Like, yeah, it was just an emotionally powerful movie. And it takes place in New York, and I'm trying to think what I went to New York that summer, for a couple of weddings, and I found there's a scene at the end of Past Lives where it's the main character and her husband and this childhood friend, which the movie, is about, what if you never went to the States? What if you stayed here and we grew up together, fell in love and stuff like that? Instead, she went and had a different life, and this guy comes and visits her in New York. And they have a scene at a bar in New York City. And they're just like, the three of them are just out talking. And then there's this moment where the two of them kind of talk. And it's like that final moment of like, oh, maybe we were together in a past life or something like that. Or just that concept of past lives. And if there's past lives, then maybe we'll end up together in a future life. So I looked up the bar that they were at. It was, I believe it's called the Holiday Cocktail Lounge in New York. Cause I knew I was just going to be spending a day in New York before I got on the train the next day to go to this wedding that I had in Connecticut. And I went and I found the bar they sat at.
Okay.
And I went in and this is by myself. Nikki had come into town, but her and her siblings were going to the Grateful Dead show at Citi Field, but I didn't get tickets. I was like, I kind of was excited to just explore New York.
Yeah.
So I just did that. I went to this bar and I sat down and I ordered a martini and I drank. I talked a little bit with the bartender and then this other woman who was sitting next to me at the bar, and we talked. And at one point I was telling her about the movie, why I was there. And then at one point she pointted out someone else in the bar. She's like, oh, what do you like? Because the beginning of that movie, the opening scene of that movie is it starts from someone else's perspective in that bar scene that I talk about at the end.
Okay.
Of them chatting, and it's people having a conversation like, oh, what do you think the relationship, what do you think the dynamic of these three people is? And it's like that kind of conversation you have at a bar, like, oh, what's their story? Those two over there.
Yeah.
And then the scene that I brought up was the scene was, that was teased in the beginning, and then they go back and you see what actually was happening from the main character's perspective. And we even, when I was chatting to this woman at the bar, she, pointed to some people, oh, let's play the game. What do you think their story is? So we had that conversation.
That's fucking awesome.
So that is just a cool thing to do. I mean, first of all, I love going to places that I've seen in movies. We do it out here all the time. We go to the place in Grand Central Market that they're eating for 1 second in La La Land montage.
Yep.
We find places. Like, you went to what? Was it the Psycho House you went to one Halloween? Did you go?
The Thriller House.
The Thriller House, right.
The Thriller House
Psycho House is on Universal slot.
We went the street where the Thriller House is, which is awesome because all the houses are kind of the old style Victorian houses in LA there. And the street really, really shows out for Halloween. So that was awesome. And we went by Fu Chow in Chinatown. That has the best wording ever on the side of a building. That's a blockbuster movie starring Jackie Chan was filmed here. Like, instead of saying Rush Hour was filmed here or whatever.
Right. What was the exact quote? Blockbuster movie starring Jackie Chan was filmed here.
And I love that. It's not even a sign. It's just painted on the wall. Building. Yeah, she's painted on the side of the building there.
A bestseller movie by Jackie Chan, Rush Hour, was shot here.
Yeah, good. That's great.
I don't know if it's going to come up on the thing, but let's see. I'm looking at the Twitch, so I'm delayed. But
no, it's not. It's not real. Oh, it's coming up a little bit. But yeah, that's just painted on the side of the building. We've done it with the Rum House in New York, which is where the scene from Birdman happens, where Keaton talks to the critic. We've gone there a bunch of times. A great little bar.
you know, the jazz club in La La Land in the Lighthouse Cafe in Hermosa Beach. We've gone there. I've only mentioned La La Land. I'm trying to think of other things that I've like gone to out here where it's like, oh, this was shot here.
Bradbury Building where they shot fucking Blade Runner.
I have been like, because I drive around the airport a lot. So I have been like recently kind of looking around. I'm like, is this like the ending of Heat? That's what I'm trying to find. Where's the ending of Heat shot?
Well, I mean, you bring up Heat. The shootout scene is
right by Grand Central, right?
Yeah. Right by Grand Central, right downtown by 4th Street down there. It's cool, like pointing stuff out like that and figuring out where things were shot from. Also, the Westin, the Bonaventure, which has, you know,
right, the, yeah,
you know, it's fucking The Dark Knight Rises, Interstellar, In the Line of Fire, which you've already mentioned. That you know, that the ending of that movie takes place there because it has those elevators that are on the outside of the building, which is fucking awesome. A great hotel. Yeah, no, it's always fun to go and explore where movies were shot, because why not? You know what I mean?
Amen, brother. Do you got anything else? Anything else you want to highlight?
I do. Okay. Actually. It's on a somber note. So you'll know where I'm going with this.
Okay.
You know, I think that movies are a great healer. I think they're a great way to get through things. And you know, we lost our Aunt Kimmy back in August, who famously one of her favorite movies was Pee Wee Herman. So to go even crazier to it, the day that our Aunt Kimmy passed away, it was actually the same day that Paul Rubens passed away, which was also, that was a crazy thing, because I know I saw, we had texted each other, or you texted the group and said, you know, like, Paul Rubens just died. It was like, no way. And Aunt Kimmy passed later that night. But when we had to fly back home to Jersey for the funeral, going back home is, I love going back home. Mm-hmm. I still call it home. So how much I like going back home. Going home for something somber like that is always tough. But the three brothers and the three ladies, you know, we spent the night hanging out at Zach's where we watched Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Mm-hmm. And that was very special to me. Because it helps you get through. It helps you get through and look back and kind of appreciate stuff from before. And it's that's, I think, also why I love movies. Because you're like, oh, you have this, like, the worst thing that happened all year, this horrible thing on it. But we can sit in reflection and remembrance of someone, and it makes us be able to explore while they were here, like, these great memories that we have. And I love it that it's like, what movie is it? Oh, it's Pee Wee Herman. You know what I mean? Like, I think that is something that's really special. And it's just, I think Pee Wee's Big Adventure is hilarious. So getting to sit down and watch it, and, you know, other people had saw it for the first time. You know, I know Katie was like, this is the first time I'm seeing this. I had no idea that this was like this. I'm like, yeah, this movie's fantastic and it's great. And I love that, you know, you can talk about all these more, oh, this is a serious movie that's brought people. And it's like, no, Pee-wee Herman, Big Adventure was one of the ones that was like, yes, this was one of those moments through the year that through all the noise, through all the hardship, through all the sadness, through all everything, there's a moment and there's something that was made 40 years ago that for an hour and a half we can sit there with each other and we can enjoy it. And it makes us think about happy times and happy things there. So I think that that was really special. I know, as you know, I think with my list, as you can see, if you don't watch a lot of new movies in the year, you have to go a different direction with things. But I think that that was one of the big ones for me. I'm assuming it was a big one for you as well. That was, I mean, come on, Pee Wee Herman, you can't fight.
Yeah, I mean,
that shit.
Perfectly put. I can't really add anything to that. I mean, that's there's just something about it. It's just, it's like that. There's obviously an added element onto it.
Yeah.
But like, well, I just, my favorite viewing experience is getting all those like highs, the highest highs with joy, and the lowest lows with like sadness, or even happy sadness and reflection and stuff like that. And just, if you can feel all of that.
I almost think this goes to, we've said it before on here, is that, you know, a lot of people are like, movies don't really make me cry. I never cried in a movie. And it's like, oh, I just wanted you to know that you're watching them wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, there was a study recently that was like, people who cry at movies have a stronger emotional intelligence.
Yeah. And no, I remember seeing that, but I think it's one of those, you're getting the full, and look at people like you talked about with Past Lives, Akira, and we talked about Interstellar with Kate. There's different things in different parts in different movies that get people to a point where they really feel that like full emotion of it.
Right.
And also I think that's a special thing. Like that's you're taking all of it in. And when you can watch something where you can see yourself in a character, I think is really special. And I don't think that every time, you know, a movie makes someone emotional, it's, oh, I could see myself, but it's you're relating to something. And I think that mutual connection of, I'm relating to someone else wrote this, someone else is acting it, I'm relating to what the writer was feeling when they wrote it, I'm relating to what the actor is feeling when they're portraying a character. I think it adds a deeper connection to it. Mm-hmm. Like absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. And I'm glad that I'm at the point where where I can watch a movie and it's fine. I think it's funny too, because I'll watch a movie where I'm like, am I getting emotional at this? It's not even sad. Like it's not, but I think I'm so happy. And I think that's that Oppenheimer thing. When they do the Trinity test and it's silent.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not silent.
Yeah.
It's like the fucking theater shook. I think everyone knew like there's going to be something loud that's bringing the audio back, and it does. And everyone jumps together and you're like, oh my God, and you're so giddy. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, I'm in the Chinese theater. Look at it. It's on the screen. It's all loud. Everyone's here. We're all doing this thing. And you're like, no way. And you know, and I also think that the variety of, you know, and I'm not talking about the Marley and Me's here, you know, let's make a movie that's meant to make you cry.
Right.
But things that you're just like, when you relate to it, like I always talk about, like when I watched the Florida Project, I was like the whole time I'm watching this thing and I'm like, this is the best. And when it gets to the end of it, I was like, if they do what I think they're going to do, I may never recover. And then they did. And I was like, I was a train wreck. And I also think we talked a little bit last time, The Farewell.
Yeah.
Right. Cause you're like, I cannot believe that's what they're going to do. And then there's the extra reveal. Like once you get to the credits, and I was like, I remember sitting on the couch and looking at Kate and I'm just a train wreck. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. It's like, so good.
And that one is because and that's where you get to like, this is set, and then it's happy set. And it's just like, I think that, being able to be comfortable with yourself feeling that way and acknowledging that it's there is an important thing that in the times we're in, it's more acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
It should have always been acceptable. But I like that we're moving towards where it's like, yeah, I love that that's how people talk about.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk about it as like, oh, fucking cried.
Right.
What are you, little bitch? And it's
loser shit.
Yeah. And it's like, are you so emotionally cut off from your own feelings that you can't even for 1 second think of what it would be like to go through this situation? Yeah. Loser shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you go to the movies and you don't cry, that's it. We're on the opposite side now. New thing. New campaign. If you don't cry at every movie you see, loser.
Loser.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that can conclude our list. I'm like looking at my list. Like, obviously there's stuff that I like, but I feel like after that was such a nice thing that you said and a touching thing that you had, I feel like it'd be weird for me. Like, oh yeah.
Fast X coming out. Jason Momoa's performance.
Favorite meme of the movie year. So let's pivot.
Okay.
We could have honestly made 2 episodes out of this.
I know.
Thank you for listening to Cue the Banter. This has been Cue the Banter. Okay, so that way, if we wanted to make it 2 episodes, we could.
Hold on, let me go ahead and obviously, to be continued, we have split this episode in two. We hope to see you next week when the second half of this episode is posted. We hope everyone enjoys their holidays with their families and has a safe and healthy new year.